This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Roshan and Noel. Now, in about half an hour, we'll be speaking with Thomas Fun, chairman of BRSIH, on the Electoral Reform Committee's proposals on election reform. And we also have a poll running on Twitter. We're asking you if you feel that food is more expensive despite low inflation. Do tell us what you think. But in the meantime, we're taking a look at our political scene through 2019, because every day this week, we're going to be taking a look at an issue that has moved to the needle in Malaysia over the past year, and we're taking a look. So we're basically doing a year in review. So to kick us off, we're taking a look at our political scene, because since GE14 for number one, we've had 9 by-elections so far in Malaysia. The Tanjung Pinang by-election was the most recent, so the 9th and quite possibly the most important to take place since GE14.
So 2018's highlight was GE14, and this year seems to be all this sentiment shifting in all these by-elections. So here's a look at the 9 state and parliamentary by-elections held since GE14. Of the 9 held to date, 5 were state assembly seats, 4 were federal, with 31 candidates all vying for those positions. 6 by-elections were caused by death of its elected representative, and 2 were due to an election petition, and 1 was due to the MP stepped down. I think this was the Port Dickson seat, where then Dato Sri Anwar Ibrahim stepped up to take that to win that seat. Now, 5 state seats were Sungai Kandis, Seri Setia, Balakong, Semenye, and Rantau, and the 4 federal seats were Port Dickson, Cameron Highlands, Sandakan, and Tanjung Piai.
So the last by-election, Tanjung Piai, we saw Pakatan losing that seat. I think sometimes with some of these by-elections, it's about the incumbency factor. But really, Tanjung Piai, I think, is really a signal to government to get its act together. I think in particular, on the education front, I think a lot of people are quite unhappy with that. And I think with the statements by Lim Guan Eng on Tar College, I think that had sort of triggered some unhappiness, to put it mildly, among the Chinese community, who take a lot of pride in, colleges like Tar College that have really provided this affordable education for low incomers.
Yeah, I mean, all of the seats were won by incumbents except for 2, which was Semenye and Tanjung Piai. And in both cases, I think the seat switched from Pakatan Harapan to Barisan National. And that makes it out of 9, Pakatan's lost 4, but again, only 2 were switched over. As for voter turnout, the highest turnout was in Rantau at 79, just over 79%, and the lowest was Balakong at just under 43%.
Yeah, notable because in October last year was the PD move, right, where we saw Dato Sri Anwar Ibrahim re-enter the political landscape. And if we remember, when that by-election was triggered, he did win by a much larger majority than the original MP, Daniel Balagopal. And so at the time, it was seen as quite a momentous move. Oh, you know, the prime minister in waiting coming back into the political landscape. Fast forward to a year and change later, and we've got Tanjung Piai, where you see what's seen as a huge shift towards Barisan Nasional as a result of protest, basically, to Pakatan Harapan's performance so far.
I think with PD, Port Dickson, it was to be expected that Anwar would win that seat. Mm-hmm. I mean, if he's prime minister in waiting, right? And, you know, imagine having Anwar represent you, the kind of benefits that you would get in your constituency.
Yeah, so there is, of course, the other big thing that's been happening on the political front has been with the opposition, because we have seen a significant change in our political party systems, specifically through Muafakat Nasional. So back in March, UMNO and PAS formalised their ties by setting up a special technical committee to explore further political cooperation. And I think they signed a deal into existence in September of this year. At that point, the two parties had previously worked together to confront Pakatan Harapan in a number of the by-elections in kind of an informal manner. And Barisan Nasional's victory in Cameron Highlands as well as Semenye seemed to have affirmed the then informal cooperation.
So there's this quote in the Straits Times that they quoted acting president at that time, Mohamed Hassan, who said, the two parties started dating in Sungai Kandis and then got engaged at Seri Setia and are now prepared to tie the knot. Now, this was a big move by UMNO, because from GE14, after losing that, they were really lost. And after they saw an exodus of elected reps, their some of their big leaders had court cases, including Dato Sri Najib Razak and Dato Sri Zahid Hamidi. And then Dato Sri Zahid Hamidi had to step aside to let Mohamed Hassan take over for a bit. So currently, the Muafakat Nasional is a political pact formed between UMNO and PAS in September. And the win in Tanjung Pia seems to have galvanized this. I mean, they won with a 15,000 vote majority. Earlier this month, they've announced that they're going to formalize it next year. Dato' Sri Zahir Ahmadi at the, I think it was the convention, said that they're looking to formalize Muafakat Nasional in 6 months, and that next year they will see a national level convention as a coalition.
So what I know about relationships and marriages, they may not last forever, right? And sometimes whether it's a win-win situation for both, and divorces can happen. And yeah, so I think it has to be seen in that context when we look at this marriage. It may not be, may not be permanent, but it is certainly expedient at this point. But I would certainly not downplay the significance of this Muafakat. In 2018, the last general elections, if you look at just popular votes, right, Barisan Nasional won 34% of the popular votes. PAS won about 17%. So if they work together in total, they could get about 54% popular votes. Pakatan Harapan was only about 48%. So we are talking about popular votes. It may not decide the outcome of who will run the government. But, you know, definitely there is some support here. And this, in 2018, Barisan Nasional was supposedly at its weakest.
Absolutely. So this is something that has been echoed also by analysts looking at the political, these political developments, saying that, you know, in Muafakat Nasional, UMNO and PAS may have found a winning formula to actually recapture power. And these are statements from a young Razali Kasim, who's a senior fellow at S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies at Nanyang Technological University, because he's of the opinion that if the tie-up does not break down and end in divorce, you know, UMNO and PAS may actually have the potential to topple the Pakatan Harapan government, especially if the ruling coalition is seen to have failed. And this is one of the things that we really have seen change over the past year. It's this shift in sentiment from, you know, the euphoria immediately following the general election to now in December of 2019, the predominant sentiment seems to be that Pakatan Harapan is not, you know, keeping up with its promises, they're not delivering on what's expected of them. And if they don't manage to recover the sentiment by GE15, they could well be in trouble.
Yeah, so I think what's key now is the succession plan, right? Tun Mahathir has indicated that he may stay on beyond 2020, but as long as he's still talking about it, as long as the newspapers write about it, there's just going to be all this uncertainty. And why are people so concerned about this succession plan, right? Because I think we realise that in the past, they didn't, both Tun Mahathir and Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim didn't have the best of relationships. And have they truly made up? I think that's the big question. And whose side is Tun Mahathir on? Is it Azmin Ali, or does he support Dato' Sri Anwar? Or maybe even the name Dato' Sri Shafi Abdal has even come up as a potential replacement. And then the question is, if Anwar comes on board, what policies would he champion? I mean, how he's been now focusing on poverty, but how does he see affirmative action? How far will he push for it?
And see, now the other big story this year, succession aside, has also been the PKR infighting. Politically, this has been a big story because PKR provides the stability for Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim to become Prime Minister. So on one side, you have Muafakat Nasional coming together. Now, MC and MSC seem to be wanting to join the fray there as well and maybe formalise it next year. On the other side, Pakatan Harapan is still fighting within themselves and within the parties that are fighting.
Yeah, absolutely. And what was it that Dato' Sri Azmin said that PKR should be? It should be Pakatan Harapan's Rock of Gibraltar, right, in terms of stability. And I don't think that's necessarily been the case, but it should have been. So this is why PKR infighting has also been such a spotlight, I think, in the media over the past year. But right now we're heading into the 7:30 news. And then after that, we'll be speaking with Dr. Imran Ahmad, Honorary Associate Professor at the Fenner School of Environment and Society at the Australian National University, about the wildfires that have been happening in Australia. Now, that's coming up after the 7:30 news. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.